Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast about Charlotte. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast about Charlotte.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Charlotte Podcast. This is John.
And this is Miller. And this is episode 113. Hey, John, we're on iTunes. You can rate, review. You can also listen on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. Basically, just listen to us. Tell us you like us.
Your preferred platform.
Yes. Look, we want to make it as simple as possible. If there's something out there we could put it on, we'll do it for you. We really, really, really care. Also, if you just want to leave us kind words, you can shoot us an email at thecharlottepodcast@gmail.com. We take requests for our guests. Our nice guy, Phil, emailed us this week. We had a nice little conversation. Hopefully something works out for him we're working on.
Yep.
We also are on social media at CLT Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. That's CLT Podcast. And then we're also on the Book of Faces at The Charlotte Podcast. Follow us there. That's where we post content. We're going to start doing more videos, stuff like that. I had a breakfast meeting with someone about a possible idea.
Oh, yeah?
I'll catch you up on that
What'd
later.
What'd you eat?
I went to the People's Market and had a chicken biscuit thing that sounded good. It was pretty good.
Was it good?
Yeah, it's a weird space. It's burned down a few times. I'm kind of worried about it.
But it's not a restaurant now, so maybe that reverses the mojo.
Or makes it even worse. Who knows?
I mean, I'm pulling for it.
Let it be known I am anti-fire. John, what is on today's podcast?
So we have a return guest. We love our return guest. Jermaine King is coming back and gracing us with his presence. The history this week is something I'm very excited about, the Charlotte Black Hornets. So we'll learn more about them. Very unknown, very cool story, or little known, I would say, in Charlotte. And then, as always, supportive words from supportive guy.
Last week, we were able to talk to the Charlotte Independent Brewers Alliance and talk about their plans not for you to get involved politically with brew and stuff like that. It's more so to, if you're buying stuff locally, you should be drinking locally.
Yeah.
You should be supporting the local economy, the beer that's made here, the people who brew it, and these really, really cool, I just love how breweries are becoming social houses. Like, we actually recorded at a brewery. It was nice to sit down, and it's kind of like what we're missing in today's society. Granted, that could be at a library, it could be anywhere, but I feel like breweries for people like you and me are starting to fill that place where you can sit down and actually look someone face-to-face, not screen-to-screen. John, what's another place you can meet people face-to-face out in real life? It goes to our Cheers of the Week. We love this concept. We've had them on. They have the person who runs it has my favorite name of all time, John Short.
Yeah.
Who gets our Cheers of the Week?
Yes, so Open Street 704 is back. They announced what the next iteration of it would be, the next event date, which is April 29th, which is typically pretty good weather, I would imagine. So you're pretty much guaranteed good weather.
Top 10 weather days all year in Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't know if you're being facetious with that or not, but I would agree.
I'm totally making it up. But
I would wager that that's the case. So it'll be in Belmont, Plaza Midwood, Noda. That's just a good route to see it because it combines like established places, up-and-coming neighborhoods, and places that don't have like the community flooding to them for reasons. So I will be there and excited about it.
So, John, we are 3 minutes into the podcast. Whew. We have raced through the homework, and now we get to the fun part.
Welcome back to the Charlotte Podcast, returning guest, triumphant return, Jermaine King of Soul Food Brand and Johnson C. Smith.
Listen, thank you, gentlemen, for having me. I'm ecstatic about being here. Great day outside, even though it's been brighter and warmer last week. I'm still excited to be here, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We have so much to talk with you about.
Yes.
So last time when you were on, we talked specifically about your course work at Johnson C. Smith and kind of Soul Food Brand and a little bit on sneaker culture. So if you're interested in a more in-depth conversation, check out our conversation from it's probably episode like 80 something in May of 2017.
I mean, that'd take a little bit of legwork for us to find that out, and we're totally not willing to do it.
Far, far too lazy and unwilling to do that. So anyway, so it happened already. But so, but to catch the folks up who may not have listened to that yet, why don't you tell us kind of what do you do now, and what is Soul Food Brand, and what's your relationship with John C.
Sure.
Smith?
So I am English faculty at Johnson C. Smith University. I teach within the university college. Traditionally, I'm a literature guy. During the fall, you know, you have more composition type courses. That's just the nature of the business. But while there, I've created the first English course in the history of higher education dedicated to identification within sneaker culture. It's actually named for a book that I wrote called Soul Food Digestible Sneaker Culture. The 10th anniversary of that book will be releasing probably in a month.
Is it available where books are sold?
Yeah, it's available where all books are sold.
Look at you, John.
Thank you.
John's a real podcast guy. Okay.
Now, that class is now housed in the interdisciplinary studies, and Soul Food Brand is the physical, think of the, I guess, the garment representation of sneaker culture. It's beyond that, but I have sweatshirts, T-shirts, cut and sew items available for purchase via soulfoodbrand.com.
Yep. I was perusing soulfoodbrand.com the other day. I love your logo.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. It's really cool. I'm a big fan.
So we're here to talk about the upcoming CIAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Give us your HBCU bona fides. What's your background? Why are you here to tell John and I, who have very little information, and why should we be excited?
Okay. So my HBCU story started, it was a dark and stormy night. I was one of the charter students in the St. Paul's College Upward Bound program. What that program does is take first generation college students and pretty much shows them the college path. Now, I was always a bright student, but I can remember getting called to the guidance counselor's office in ninth grade thinking, like, why are they calling me here? And the first thing I heard was, give up my summer. So it's college prep, again, for first-generation students. I'm a 2000 graduate of Elizabeth City State University and a 2001 graduate of Virginia State University. Literally right now going through my dissertation at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. But I've been English faculty at Johnson C. Smith since 2006. So I call myself a charlatan at this particular point. There are no native charlatans from what the running joke is. And we know that's not true, but what the streets say is what the streets says.
I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
I'm going to get an email.
But as far as the CIAA goes, my history, all the schools that I mentioned are all conference or were conference members. So I've pretty much been raised in the CIAA since I was about 16 years old.
So this is a conference. It has all sports. It has everything. And we've done a few preview episodes for this, kind of the importance of it. But there is this one culminating event that is everything CIAA, and that's the basketball tournament coming up at the end of this month. It is February 27th through Saturday, March 3rd. Give the listeners why it's more than just a basketball tournament, why it's different than what South Atlantic Conference or what an ACC tournament would be. What's the difference in this?
The difference is that, well, for starters, it is the third largest tournament in the United States behind the ACC and the Big Ten. And the Big Ten didn't have a conference tournament until 1999.
I like that you went with for starters.
Yeah,
like
that's exactly.
First of all.
So since until 1999, it was the second largest behind the ACC. Consider it a homecoming for all member institutions, mm-hmm. as a chance to see graduates and friends and convene upon for what seems like, what, 11 years now? 11 years here in Charlotte?
I think so.
Yeah. So a homecoming of sorts. Now, along with that, the very first CIAA tournament happened in a gym, and right after the game, the championship game, there was a gym jam. So that party element historically has been a part of the conference. Now, there are individuals who have not attended a member institution who will descend upon Charlotte because mm-hmm. of the revelry, the chance to revel with other partygoers. But historically, there was a party right after the tournament, and it was in the gym. So that is historic as well. But for member institution, for graduates, is an opportunity to literally salute each other one more year for the next year. So think of it as a homecoming of sorts.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to step on John's toes, going back in history a little bit. And we'll certainly get to the kind of party atmosphere of it. But I would like to backtrack or step back and talk about HBCUs, mm-hmm. and talk about CIAA's kind of place in HBCU culture and kind of where it stands in terms of either competition level, mm-hmm. and then also in terms of size or recognition. So if you want to give us kind of a dip our toes into that.
Sure. So with the CIAA is a Division II conference. However, the closest Division I HBCU conference would be the MEAC. Many of the MEAC member institutions are former CIAA institutions.
What, can you give us an example? What,
yeah, like, for example, Norfolk State University,
okay.
Hampton University.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of a couple others. It was Delaware State. But many, like pretty much most of the MEAC were at one point. Oh, North Carolina Central. North Carolina Central definitely. They left the CIAA in 2006, right after winning the football championship.
Okay.
Hampton and Norfolk State left in 1996.
Okay.
If I remember, yeah, 1996 with Norfolk State and Hampton. So those conferences, the schools are bigger. Like the size,
yeah.
Take the size of the schools. However, their tournament is not the, doesn't have the pageantry or the history that the CIAA has. You know, from a marketing standpoint, they would say, well, you know, that's not what we're about. But from generation to generation, graduates of those institutions still attend.
Mm-hmm.
They still attend the CIAA tournament. So in size, CIAA is smaller schools, but at the same time, the competition, you know, recently, you know, Virginia State University is handling Norfolk State as if they were still Division II.
Yeah, right.
Football team went up to Norfolk and beat them last year, went on to an undefeated regular season, lost in the playoffs, unfortunately. Elizabeth City State University just beat Norfolk State last week in basketball, men's basketball. And Virginia State beat them this season as well. So,
yeah.
Competing-wise,
yeah.
Competing for some of the same athletes, mm-hmm. The schools have history. So, again, it's like playing like Duke playing Carolina, no matter which team is up.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter, like, I know you.
Yeah.
Goes back to how far.
Throw the record books out the window for this one.
Yeah, so we're able to, the CIAA is able to compete with Division I conferences, whether they be the MEAC or just any other. It just depends on the recruiting of the specific team.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can, let's take it like even broader lens than sports. Like why do HBCUs matter in your perspective? As somebody whose education and career to this point has been with these institutions, like what is specific unique, assuming you would encourage somebody that might be in your shoes considering where to go to college, like would you encourage them to go to an HBCU, and if so why? As somebody who has not did not consider an HBCU mm-hmm. growing up, what would recommend an HBCU?
Well, I will say this. And speaking specifically of Johnson C. Smith University, where I am employed, Johnson C. Smith University may be one of the, if not the most diverse HBCU in this nation. We have students from several different countries of all race, colors, and creeds. But for those considering attending an HBCU, whether they are a person of color or not, it is many times would be considered a safe haven. Like pretty much like home base in a game of tag, is a place where the HBCU was created to educate the sons of former slaves. And many institutions have that background. For example, Wilberforce in Ohio, Johnson C. Smith here in Charlotte. So they started as a place for slaves to actually learn a trade, and have grown into the mammoth institutions that they are now. So why would someone consider attending HBCU? And I'll use this particular example. I've had students who in the past our students do well, very well. Students who would do well, they thought financially they would attend a nearby school because, you know, private tuition, state tuition.
Right.
And I've had some of the students come back, or we've had some come back because of the more of a close-knit, you know, if you're in a class of, I think the largest class I've had in my career that I can remember may have been maybe 70 people in it, maybe, and that was like a lab type situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's not uncommon to be elsewhere and to have a class with 400 people.
Right, sure.
It's not uncommon at all. I have class sizes, like a large class for me would be, if I had 30 students in the class, we're talking like hell in a cell. You know, that's a lot of students. But it's a close-knit environment where it's more hands-on. The same way if you were to sit down in a restaurant, your meal would be prepared specifically to your
yeah,
specifications.
Yeah, sure.
And then maybe if you went to a chain, you know, you're getting something under the lamp. And that's not a knock to larger institutions, but the education is tailored, is bespoke education.
Yeah. Huh, I like that. I've never heard it explained in that way.
Mm-hmm. I like it. So this definitely leads to a sense of school pride, obviously. As you've talked about pride for universities, you're rocking Johnson C. Smith right now. Does this kind of bring itself even to a larger conference? So the CIAA tournament is a way for people to come show pride for their school, but also show pride for their conference, show pride for being a part of the HBCU community. Is that kind of what makes this event so special?
It is. Because here's the thing. This is the funny part, what I always joke, like, Johnson C. Smith has their rival, Livingstone College,
yep.
right? Some of the greatest jokes I've ever made in my life were, and keep in mind, I'm not a graduate of JCSU, but I'm a witty guy, right?
If I do say so myself.
Like, some of the greatest jokes I've ever said have been directed toward Livingstone.
Jimmy, their teams are bad.
Well, I mean, they are, it's a smaller school, and but they, you know, they just beat Johnson C. Smith.
Yeah,
no,
I was like, today is probably not the best day to say that.
I saw the footage like Saturday thinking like, oh, man, was it like blouses, game blouses? Yeah. Like they pulled up for step back, hizzy, all net.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's one of those things where, like, you can joke on your brother or your mm-hmm. little sister. Like, you could, you know, push your little brother or sister around, right, or your cousin. But let someone from down the street do so, and it's like, wait a minute,
hold on, wait a minute,
and a lot of that's you can say that definitely about the conference. So with the teams, the rivalries are real. As a matter of fact, JCSU and Livingstone is the oldest rivalry in HBCU football. It was the first HBCU football game, but these member institutions, the graduates, the attendees, the students, they all come together like Voltron during that time. Yeah. Like whatever real beast there be is going down during that time. So it's really about fellowship. And I wrote this article in college that talked about, compared, it said that I ended it with saying that the CIAA tournament, perhaps it should be played in Philadelphia because of all the brotherly love. And lo and behold, we pick up a school from Lincoln. Who's located up there near Philly. So a lot of camaraderie, a lot of kinship. It is the closest thing I can compare it to is a big family reunion.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing as far as a week of just potato sack races and I guess who can make the best potato salad content, like those type of things, like the type of things you would see at a family reunion.
Yeah.
So we are 1 week, 1 day away. What are you looking from the tournament? What are you looking forward to? What are your plans? Have you already made them?
No, my plans were made 3 years in advance. So I
yeah,
sit,
take us through day by day. Yeah. What's your itinerary?
Okay, so I sit courtside.
Humble brag.
Doing it.
I mean, so Jermaine and Mr. CIAA, like between the two of them, like are there bigger like bona fides? Like he's been educated thoroughly at HBCUs and CIAA schools, currently faculty. So I'd be surprised if you weren't.
Yeah, I can't go back to those plebeian seats after that. but I'll be sitting courtside. Literally, my CIAA experience is what pair of 33 high Ewings I'm going to wear today. And how soon will someone like text me the picture of the paparazzi that the photographer just took while I'm sitting there. That's all I got. Like I'm literally from Tuesday through Saturday sitting courtside. And historically, back when I was calling the conference when I was in college, we would dress up on championship night, which is historically what individuals do. Like you would see the Sunday go to meeting clothes mm-hmm. you can see on Sunday. So I wear a suit on championship.
I love it so much, man. God. I love walking around in
all
uptown.
Basketball all week. I'm talking like overdosing basketball.
How many pairs of 33 high Ewings do you have?
A 33 high specifically, maybe about 40-ish, somewhere in the 40s.
How do
I thought you
were going
to say four. Yeah.
I knew I wasn't coming up empty with that question. How do you decide which ones to wear?
Okay.
Like, take me through that process.
That is okay. I can answer that one. Okay. All right. So, like most sneakers, particular ones have they're not created equal.
Yeah. Right?
So, some 33 high have better quality. Like, they have better quality materials.
Okay.
So, when they release or when I'm gifted those or however it goes, I set them aside. I'm like, okay, this is for next year. I don't like. So these will not. I'm not wearing these unless it's like. There's a pair that I got 2 years ago that I've not worn. That this is a great Ric Flair sweatshirt.
Yeah, yeah.
That I may wear. I may or may not wear, but. Yeah, the good ones.
There's like, a tease right there.
Yeah. Soulfoodbrand.com.
Soulfoodbrand.com. There's well, actually, that's not mine because I don't want Legacy Talent Agency coming.
Oh, yeah.
Coming for me.
That's right.
But yeah, some of the things I will be on Soulfood. But certain shoes are just too good just not to wear.
Yeah.
Just to wear, like going to Walmart or, you know.
Right.
So those are how I choose.
They demand an occasion.
Yeah, like this is a special occasion pair. So they've already been picked out. I picked them out this time last year. So.
Okay.
Before we get to it, John has been on his phone for a bit. He's been doing research, mm-hmm. and I've promised John one thing. But before we get to that, I do want to point out that it's not just parties. It's not just men's basketball. That there is a ton going on there. There's also women's basketball. It goes the entire week. And then there's also, when I went, the thing I enjoyed the most when I've gone to games are the cheer squads.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily their routines. It's their routines and taunting the other cheer squad.
And the reaction of the other band and cheerleaders.
It is incredible. Can you maybe take a, like, what is, if someone was to walk into a gym and it's Thursday, a game, what are they going to see? What are they going to experience at time or Spectrum Center, the spec?
Okay. So on Thursday, by the time, all right.
So Thursday's at. The first two rounds are at Bojangles Coliseum,
yeah.
and that is Tuesday and Wednesday. So Thursday will be the first night at the spec.
Mm-hmm. So on that, by that day, and again, there are hardcore basketball fans who are graduates of the institutions, but that's the day where everyone's gotten to town by Thursday. And historically, Thursday night is when you start to see the numbers. This particular year, I would expect Thursday to be liver than it was last year, or maybe even the year before that. So you can see literally no different from any other conference tournament, but school paraphernalia galore.
Yeah.
You can see, you'll never see literally generate that many generations together at one time, not even at individual homecomings for particular schools.
Yeah.
So you may see someone from literally, I was backcourt restaurant last year.
Humble brag. Cracking some heels back there, telling some great jokes. His shoes were awesome.
One of 50 pairs.
But there were two gentlemen who were graduates of JCSU who were class of 56 and like 61. And let me tell you guys, these gentlemen, if they'd have told me they'd graduated in 79 or 88, or maybe not 88, 82, I didn't know that they were that seasoned.
It's almost like there's a rhyming phrase to describe.
Oh my goodness!
How they did not age.
But John. I sat there and listened. And this is one of the times in my life where I literally tried my best to shut up and just soak in the things that they said. And they were describing. People think that I'm a hard professor. This gentleman shared with me. He was drafted to go to the war, and something about coming back. Oh, you know, he told his professor. He had to go to this military situation. He was like, well, you're going to fail the class. And I'm like, but dude, he was going to serve the country. And he's like, yeah, you leave and you're failing the class. Yeah. There's no.
So he failed.
So he failed the class.
Wow.
I'm thinking.
That's academic rigor right there.
You think I'm a tough guy. But yeah. You're going to see generations, multiple generations from 8 to 80.
Pep bands.
Yeah.
You mentioned the how competitive the players and cheerleaders are. In 41 years of life, I've not seen the type of ethnocentrism as I've seen with bands. Like, you would think that, you know, they have like a naked bootleg play that they're going to run the score in the two-minute drill. The competition there is legitimate. And by the way, since I'm mentioning that, Johnny Gill's Rub You the Right Way, it is not CIAA tournament until some band goes into their rendition of Johnny Gill's Rub You the Right Way. Or the sports center thing. Those are the two. If I don't hear those, it has not started until I hear those two things.
All right. So John is chomping at the bit. I have on my Timex Ironman watch.
Yeah, ooh.
I am,
humble brag.
Yes, all $35. I'm giving you, I'm setting it to 2 minutes and 26 seconds to talk about Johnson C. Smith men's basketball team and preview them for the basketball tournament.
So as some of the listeners might know, I do color commentary for Queens basketball, crosstown rival.
Humblebrag.
Yeah. and I had the good fortune of watching the crosstown rivalry that I think should be a bigger deal in Charlotte between Queens and Johnson C. Smith. They actually played twice this year.
This is a pro-Queens podcast?
Yes, yes. Go Royals. Number two, giant game on Saturday against Lincoln Memorial. But in December, I got to see the game at Queens against Johnson C. Smith. That I'll handicap this a little bit by seeing through the Queens lens. I've seen Queens be really tested twice this year. Once was, three times. Once was Lincoln Memorial, a game that they lost, the only loss of the season. Second was against Newberry last Wednesday. And the third was Johnson C. Smith, who overcame a 21-point deficit in order to cut the game and, I believe, take the lead in the second half, like, with very little time remaining. They fought and clawed all the way back from 21 down.
One of the greatest shames about these games where Queens and John C. Smith play, it's always during winter break, so the
That's
student
right.
bodies are not there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So few right. there's probably, I mean, it was probably 50-50, but there were plenty of John C. Smith
110
students there. So anyway, long story short, the past couple years, John C. Smith hasn't been their expectations haven't been very high going into the tournament. But my expectations for them this year on their arguably home turf, not they don't play in Brayboy, obviously, but I expect big things from them in the tournament. They're going to be the
seconds.
One seed. I expect three guys to look out for: Roderick Ross, Christian Kirchman, and Robert Davis. Kirchman and Davis are experienced backcourt senior guards, can fill it up.
Is backcourt guards? Or?
That's guards.
Okay.
And this guy Roderick Ross is the reason that they came back against Queens. Is this guy's like inside out, like slasher type game? He just hit a number of threes from outside to bring him back, and those three guys just put the team on their back and came back against the number two team in all of Division II.
17 seconds. Any other thoughts?
That it's a shame that they lost to Livingstone, but I think they can put it together and finish strong and lock up the number one seed in their division.
I'm really proud of you, John.
Thanks.
That's the first segment you've ever gone under it.
Wow. I'm seized. I know how to keep them short when I talk about it.
You can tell when I start looking at my watch. All right. We wanted to pivot into discussion about a movie.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed my day off and went and saw Black Panther. It was lovely. And Jermaine and I were talking about before you came in, John, because you're early, but you were late for the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
What an experience it was. So for me, I kind of walked in. I'm not a comic book guy. I know very little about the Marvel universe other than like what I've seen on Netflix or whatever, and walked away saying that was a really, really enjoyable movie. There's a fight scene where it was the most tension I felt in a long time in a movie. And I also knew the cultural ramifications of it. They're for the African American community, this is director, all the actors, there's only two white characters and one dies and one's like pretty minor. And just the experience of it, like walking out of the Phillips Place movie theater at 3 a.m. and seeing people take pictures in front of the poster and the significance of it. I think Jermaine, you being on the podcast, being able to frame it and talk about it in a way that John and I couldn't, I think that's something we certainly should take advantage of and get your thoughts on.
Well, first of all, thank you. So I am definitely what they would consider a bleak, right? Like a black geek, I guess.
You said that earlier, and I didn't know
what
it
meant. I've not heard that term.
Yeah. So I've read these things, like one of these things. Like I've read graphic novels growing up. So here's the thing. Marvel has this great – they do this great job of creating films for people, for everyone. Like for people who read graphic novels and for like the hardcore geeks. This film does a great job of – I love how they take part of the narrative, or they take part of the canon and change it just enough to fit into the film. I don't want to give any spoilers here, but a couple things I'm watching, like, oh, that character and that character are one character, right? But the costuming, I don't even want to call it costuming because they look like actual clothing that you would wear in Wakanda or any other African country for that matter. The language, they used actual language. Right? Mm-hmm. There's literal actual language from the film. And the gentleman who plays the character from the graphic novel is Manape. So it's like M'Baku. I think it's M'Baku in the film. That guy is a graduate of Yale.
Really?
He and Angela Bassett created this. Let me get this straight. She created a acting group for minority students.
Hmm.
And he greeted her the first day on set and was like, thank you, because they're both Yale alum. But yeah, his career is headed for
– he was really good.
Oh, man. He's going to end up being the Boba Fett of the black – because they're going to like, we got to just give him a better role. Mm-hmm. Right? Give him his own spinoff, right?
Yeah.
He might even create a spinoff in the comics, but hey.
Jermaine, we're going to keep you around because we know you love this stuff. We're talking history. We're talking
about before we shift to history, do you want to do any plugs?
This. Yeah, you're doing my job.
How can we find you in social media?
So, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at Soul Food Brand. You may also reach me via my website, which is soulfoodbrand.com, midsoulsdontcrack.com. That's midsoulsdontcrack.com. And did I mention JermaineLavarKing.com? So those are the ways you can please reach out. And while you're there on the website, buy something as well. I wouldn't mind. Yes.
Highly recommend the Instagram follow. I think highly entertaining feed, I would say.
All right. It's now time for our weekly segment where John enlightens us with a piece of Charlotte's history you might not have known. So the next time someone says, hey, man, Charlotte doesn't have any history, you look them right in the eye and repeat the following segment verbatim. Take it away, John.
Well, thanks, Miller. So everybody's familiar with the story of the Charlotte Hornets and like the Hornets' Nest and kind of how the region got to be known as the Hornets, or take pride in the Hornets' symbology. And hopefully you're familiar that there was a baseball team called the Hornets before the NBA franchise. And hopefully, because you've been listening to the podcast, you know there was a World Football League team that was also named the Hornets that played in the 70s. But there's another Charlotte Hornets baseball team from the early 20th century that is considerably lesser known, but I think is a fascinating story, and that is the Charlotte Black Hornets. So the Charlotte Black Hornets were one of the most favorite Negro League baseball teams in the eastern United States. And they played – the data's a little fuzzy around it just because the – Observer didn't cover Negro League baseball, as you probably can imagine, in the 30s. But they were around from roughly the 30s to the mid-1950s. They were owned by a man named Pringle Ferguson, whose family is still in the area, from what I understand. And while there's few artifacts remaining and very few pictures, again, just because the media wasn't available at the time, a lot of the history of the team has been passed down. It's kind of like oral history. These baseball teams were a huge part of the African-American community in Charlotte. So, the Black Hornets weren't the only ones. There was also a Brown Hornets team that, played in the 30s as well. And, a team called the Charlotte Red Sox, two words, which I thought was, a nice differentiator. And they were a barnstorming team. And so have you ever heard the difference between a barnstorming team and a like regular minor league
of
team?
Course, but please just tell everyone.
Okay, so you've heard the term barnstorming before, right? Just like a team comes in, like in sports, yes. Like a team comes in and just like blows the doors off of the home team, right? So these barnstorming teams were basically travel teams that would go around like looking for a game, right? And so they'd show up and play like a church or a YMCA or like a mill, but they're a bunch of just like guys who'd be like, all right, on this day, we're going to get together. Like, you bring your guys, we'll bring our guys, and then you're going to pay us, like, $5 a head or whatever. And then the home team would set up the game, and they'd split the gate and stuff like that. But these teams were just, like, challenging. So there's, like, a challenge to beat what these barnstorming teams. Mm-hmm. So the difference between from what I read, the Charlotte Red Sox were better than the Charlotte Black Hornets, but the Black Hornets were a franchise that played home games, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it really interesting time in terms of baseball and entertainment and the African-American community and kind of the options for entertainment at that time. So you mentioned earlier, Jermaine, kind of the first CIAA tournament and how there was a party at a gym jam after the championship game of the first CIAA tournament. And that was the case with these games as well. So these games for the Charlotte Black Hornets were kind of big community events, and they'd be involved with live bands and often dances, and they're just kind of the community event of the week where everybody comes together. They draw up to 1,000 people, which at the time was a very percentage wise of the African American community, that's like everybody being there, right? So they get there and it's just kind of a big social event where they'll play baseball and kind of celebrate the community. And the Charlotte Black Hornets, I think, has a very interesting story that you don't hear a lot when you talk about the sports history of the area.
You said they had home games. Do we know where they play?
I don't. I wasn't able to find exactly. I imagine it traveled around a bit, even though they weren't kind of a barnstorming team. Mm-hmm. They're kind of always in search of places that they could play.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So there you go. So Charlotte Black Hornets.
And that was all those other Hornet teams I am familiar with was not familiar with the Black Hornets. So you've educated me today.
Well, there you go. Excellent. Gotcha. That's the goal. Always the goal of every history segment.
You're so happy right now.
Let's peel back the onion of this town we call Charlotte.
Oh my gosh. You want to do this intro for the next segment?
I do. Let me turn my notes around here. Mm-hmm. So it's time for our weekly segment, Supportive Words from Supportive Guy. Supportive Guy is the anti-troll. His mission is to promote positivity and whimsy in hopes to create an internet community that's truly glad online. And as part of this mission, each week he writes some supportive words for our podcast listeners. As always, you're listening to the inspiring words of Supportive Guy as we wrap up this week's episode.
Happy Monday, dear listeners. Hope today finds you doubles lunging with your bestie, hurtling towards a forever friendship at record speeds. We are joined today by one of my favorite local educators, entrepreneurs, and people, Jermaine King. Jermaine joined us to talk about, among many other interesting topics, Marvel's Black Panther. Due to my schedule and the young ages of my children, I have not been able to get to the theater to see the movie yet, even though I very much want to. But don't worry, people on the internet have been chiming in to talk about crucial plot points so that I may enjoy the movie in insufficient, out-of-context chunks. Folks are also more than willing to talk about how great the movie is, and how you haven't seen it, you're really missing out. This has been great for me, since one of my New Year's resolutions was to experience FOMO more. John, do you know what FOMO means?
Yes, fear missing out.
So in conclusion, and in summary, I'm glad everyone is liking Black Panther so much, and the effects are great, and Michael B. Jordan is great, because of course he is, and it all lives up to the hype, which was substantial. Sorry, supportive guy. You deserve an enjoyable time at the movies, even if it was without your old pal SG. Have a great week. Until next time.
Will you woo with us?
You want to woo with us?
Sure. Right. Hold it. You cut it down.
I'll count down.
Okay.
And it'll be on 3, 2, 1, pause, woo.
Okay.
We had some confusion last time. Looking at you, Tark.
All right.
3, 2, 1,
woo!
Gosh, that was good.
It's like you've done that before.
Mm-hmm.